Hey Gilmore Ball Z fans. So before we jump into this episode, there's something that was brought to my attention that we want to take a little bit of time to discuss. We've talked on the last couple episodes, ever since it came up, about this letter that Lorelai gave to Logan to give to Rory, and that Rory reads it, we never see what it is, and then she just miraculously decides to take Logan back after reading this letter. And it's terrible, and it's hacky, and I hate it. But something has been brought to our attention. In an episode that you should have heard by now, I ask, do we ever find out what happens in this letter? And Paige tells me, no, we don't. And it turns out that that's not completely accurate. Friend of the show, all caps Kiri, has brought it to our attention that there is a letter that could only be seen on display at the Warner Brothers studio tour in Burbank, California. So we don't know much of the background behind this letter. We don't know if this was written for the episode, and so there was actually something written on the piece of paper for Alexis to react to, or if this was written after the fact as just like a fun Easter egg for people who came to do the studio tour. Hey, you're at the Warner Brothers studio tour. Want to read the worst plot device in history? Sure.
This is not even the worst plot device in Gilmore Girls. Come on.
Yeah, you're right. But still, it exists. So we have a link. We have a Tumblr post here that has a photo of the letter and a transcript. We'll link it in the show notes of this episode. And I just want to talk about it for a little bit. Paige, do you want to read the letter?
Dear Rory, so right now you are reading my sealed words of wisdom as the tormented, foolish, but persistent Cad hangs off every nuance of your reactions. His heart and mind a dizzying flurry of questions as to how the outcome will play out. As you read this, delight in the knowledge that this lovesick pup before you does not have a clue. Now, ordinarily, after a fool has taken my daughter's love for granted, if I did not kill him through a slow, excruciatingly painful death, I would instruct my daughter, much like Miss Havisham did to Estella in Great Expectations, to be cold-blooded and calculating, to dash his hopes and crush him. However, the decision is all yours to make. Love is elusive and all-encompassing. When you fall under its intoxicating spell, you have little recourse but to live out its devices. If you love this boy, maybe you want to give it another chance? ? Good luck. Love you, Mom.
So,
ugh.
Okay, so we need to break down really quick all the reasons why this is terrible.
Oh, this is so terrible.
The first paragraph I actually like, right? This first bit of like, oh, he's watching you and he's tormented and foolish but persistent and he's hanging off all the nuances. So like, have fun with that and drag it out. That's very Lorelai. And like,
kinda. Well, keep going.
Like that is the kind of dumb prank that Lorelai would do, and I like that, and it works, right?
Yes. That part, yes. Keep going.
But the main thing, my main issue with this, right, is that this was supposed to be some kind of illuminating, life-changing thing that made Rory change her mind.
Yep.
And yet, the thesis of it is, trust your instincts. And Rory's instincts all the way up through that episode were saying, he's a creep, don't take him back, because he was stalking her and was a creep, and she shouldn't take him back. So, like, this retroactively makes that plot point make even less sense?
I see it a little differently, and I have issues with it for different reasons. My first, and this is just a base level thing, making a reference to Great Expectations is not what Lorelai would pull here.
No.
For one thing, I don't believe that Lorelai has ever read Great Expectations. I believe that she's smart enough to read Great Expectations, but I don't think she ever has, because let's face it, she dropped out of high school at 15, and probably after, like, working very hard and not having much free time, fell in love with TV and movies. She's not a book girl, and I don't really see her getting into Dickens.
No, if she's going to read a book, she's not going to read Great Expectations.
No, she's going to read,
because nobody should read Great Expectations, because Great Expectations is terrible.
She would read, like, crappy rock star memoirs and delight in the cocaine stories.
Totally.
I feel like Rory would try to get her into, like, Oliver Twist or one of the, like, bonkers Dickens books by telling her that it's exactly like a rock star memoir where they're, like, pickpocketing children and, you know, someone dies.
Oh, yeah, totally. She would definitely, Like, I could even see Lorelai getting into different Dickens under different circumstances. But
right.
Yeah, Great Expectations is a weird pull for Lorelai.
It's a weird pull for Lorelai, but also just the tone of this, like the arch tone of the sealed words of wisdom as the tormented, foolish, but persistent cad hangs off of every nuance of your reactions. Lorelai would not in a million years write that.
See,
I get what, like, that
I get what they were going for.
I get what they were going for, where she's trying to be fancy to, you know, like, play up the melodrama of the situation. But do you know who this sounds like? It sounds like Richard messing with someone.
It does sound more like Richard messing with someone, although I could totally believe that it's Lorelai channeling Richard to mess with someone.
I don't buy it for a letter that she's writing for for Rory.
That's true.
Like, she's not writing this for Logan. He's never going to see this as far as she knows. And she's pretty sure he won't see it or else she wouldn't write that. She's writing this for Rory. This doesn't sound like something she wrote for her kid.
No.
I think the reason that it's supposed to turn her, even though it tells her to trust her instincts, is that one is tacit approval that Lorelai is okay with this if it's what Rory chooses to do. And a lot of Rory's conflict has been like, yes, I like him, but he seems like a bad idea, and my mom doesn't like it. And if my mom doesn't like it, then she probably knows what she's saying because it turned out this horrible way. And also, you know, she hasn't liked my boyfriends in the past, and some of that's turned out badly, that kind of thing. So it adds that approval from Lorelai that lets her be more free to do it and to let herself do it, but it doesn't explain the quick turnaround between I never want to see you again to let's go out again.
Yeah, it does. This only deepens my confusion at that scene.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it anything better, and I find it hard to believe that this was written for the episode because it makes such little sense.
Well, and just even love is elusive and all-encompassing. When you fall under its intoxicating spell, you have little recourse but to live out its devices.
Yeah, that's not Lorelai at all.
That's not Lorelai at all. That's not, like, especially, let's try to think back. Where was Lorelai and Luke at that point? Were, like, did she know about April, or was that?
I don't think she did.
Okay. So, that's not how their relationship went, though. Even if she doesn't have, like, a factor that's scooping it out, like, that doesn't sound like what Lorelai's experience of love would be.
No. It doesn't, yeah, none of this makes any sense. So that's what leads me to believe it was probably written after the fact by somebody who wasn't really thinking.
Well, especially, just talking about when you're fall under love's intoxicating spell, you have to live out its, you have little recourse but to live out its devices, is weird advice for Lorelai in particular to give.
Mm-hmm.
Lorelai, who had a kid at 16 and has spent most of her life since then trying to make sure that Rory didn't make the same mistake she did, that makes zero sense.
I didn't think I could hate this plot point more, and yet this little bit of fan trivia walked into my life and somehow made it worse.
That being said, we still want to say thanks to All Caps Kiri for bringing this to our attention. You might not be living down the street from us anymore because of COVID, but we appreciate that you're still watching out for us and telling us things that make us miserable.
Yeah, no, this is the definition of thanks, I hate it. Yeah, I don't think there's really anything more to say about this letter. I felt like it needs discussing considering how truly baffling. Maybe it's not the worst plot device, but it's easily the most baffling plot device I have seen on TV.
Yeah.
Just in how it happened and who thought it was a good idea and how we got here. So yeah, that's all I wanted to say on that. I just wanted to take a quick moment to discuss that. And now that that is done, we can get on with the rest of the episode. Hello and welcome to Gilmore Ball Z, the podcast where I show my wife Dragon Ball Z. She shows me Gilmore Girls, and we both try to find some kind of common ground. I'm Grant.
And I'm Paige.
This week we watched episode 136 of Dragon Ball Z Kai, and season 6, episode 15 of Gilmore Girls, the infamous Martha's Vineyard episode.
Yeah, Vineyard Valentine.
Yes, but before we get to that, Paige, what happened this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai?
Well, I think the first thing that I need to mention that's important was there was a last time on Dragon Ball, And the entire summary of what happened last time on for Boo was Boo bouncing around a multicolored space yelling indiscernible sounds for like 30 seconds.
Yeah, it was like, last time on Dragon Ball Z Kai, wee-hoo-hoo-ha-ha-boo! I was like, yeah, that is basically what's happened so far this season.
If I said it, it would sound like a parody, but this is legitimately last time on. And this is still what Boo is doing. He decides that it's time for him to sleep, so he finds a small town. Except that it has too many people, so he turns them into clay. It has too many animals, it's not quite the right shape. Why he chose this town in the first place, not really clear. But he turns everyone in it into clay. Thankfully, like, it seems like being transformed by Boo still does release your soul into the ether. We'll talk about that later, but he takes all of this and turns it into a house, at which point we get, like, weirdly an almost more palatable episode of Elmo's World than the actual Elmo's World. That Elmo and Boo are in stiff competition for who's worse, and we just get a little, like, day in the life of Boo explaining what he does. He's like, Boo brushes teeth now! But, like, some of it's, like, naked Boo in the bathtub, seeing more Boo than I wanted to see. There's nothing, like, explicit, but it's still more than I wanted. Then, like, Boo on the toilet pooping. Like, this was, like, 5 minutes of this episode was Boo going about his day and narrating the entire thing. Oh, and he asked the truck driver if he was handsome, and when he said no, he killed him and destroyed his truck. But... like, a lot of this episode was just Boo going through his daily life. He sings his pajama song.
I like Boo's pajama song.
You know, in a vacuum, Boo's pajama song is great. I just can't forgive what's happened. Like,
I found a day in the life of Boo to be charming, but we can talk about that later.
Meanwhile, up on the watchtower, Chi-Chi still has not recovered from finding out that Gohan is dead. So the reason that she hasn't been here for any of this, and that the Ox King hasn't been here for any of this, is because she's fainted somewhere and the Ox King is trying to wake her up. They finally tell her that Goku's got like 15 minutes left, and he's like, oh, we better wake her up right now. So he wakes her up, they tell her what's going on, and she declares that, you know, she's going to kill Goku again because he only has 15 minutes, so she's so angry she's going to kill him after he dies. Like, some A-plus Chi-Chi dialogue. And she goes to try to say goodbye. Goku is still busy teaching Trunks and Goten. They kind of say goodbye a little bit. It's not really the focus here. The focus more is that Trunks and Goten are still trying to learn fusion, and it's still not quite right. Instead, they want to see Super Saiyan 3, because they think if they can go Super Saiyan 3, then maybe they can win that way. And Goku's like, no, no you won't. He shuts it down real quick, but then makes a even stupider decision where he's like, but I'll show you Super Saiyan 3, because you didn't get a chance to see it before. And they're like, yeah! This depletes the time he already has down from like a half an hour to like no time at all. So he's just gonna leave. He asks Piccolo, who, for the record, thought that going Super Saiyan 3 was a terrible idea, and he was correct. He asks Piccolo to continue teaching Goten and Trunks fusion. It's important to note here that Piccolo has heard of fusion, and now he's seen it kind of portrayed by Goku, who forgets steps all the time. Like, now apparently breathing is part of the equation. You have to breathe in time as well. He's heard of it, he's seen Goku talk about it. He's never actually seen this technique, so how he's supposed to correct their form to get it correct to do fusion? It remains to be seen. It sounds like a bad plan to me. Meanwhile, Videl has a feeling that Gohan's alive. Like, Chi-Chi doesn't know how she's gonna survive without Goku and without Gohan. And Goku's like, well, you still have Goten, your five-year-old child. And she's like, well, yeah, but he's gonna go die soon. Like, the important thing that's noted to note here is that he's five and he needs more care than he can take care of her right now. Like, maybe when he's older, sure, but not anytime soon. But she's like, well, you know, you're sending our son out to die after I lost my husband and my son. He's like, oh no, the kids will be fine. This fusion thing is totally gonna work. Everything's gonna be fine. She's like, okay. Videl is like, by the way, I don't think Gohan is dead because the power of love and connection, I guess. And everyone else is like, no, you stupid child. We don't feel his energy. He must be dead. She's like, oh, I guess I'm being silly. Baba shows up to say, no, Goku, it is really time to leave now. And Goten obviously wants something, and Goku does have a little bit of emotional intelligence this time and figures out that he wants a hug from his dad, and he doesn't know how to ask it. It is really cute for a second. He picks Goten up. Goten is like a tiny little koala nestled into his heart. You can tell that this is the saddest and most comfortable Goten has ever been. Goku goes away. We get a short scene that's accurate but frustrating, where Roshi declares himself, Bulma, Krillin, and 18 useless, while they're sitting out playing cards doing nothing, just because of the power level that Boo has. Bulma points out that maybe just not having a high power level doesn't mean you're useless, because really this is the hand of cards she's been dealt her entire life. She's been hanging out with super strong fighters as a non-fighter, and maybe just like this whole if we can't fight something, we're completely useless strategy is pretty stupid. It's also weird that Roshi is finally realizing this after Boo, not after any of the other fighters where he's been completely useless for the entirety of the last 135 episodes.
Yeah, like Roshi has been irrelevant on a power scale for the entirety of Z.
Yeah. And I don't know, I know that Boo is much more powerful than 18, but I don't know if I'd render her completely irrelevant. I feel like she can still, like, delay Boo even for a second if we've seen other fighters who are similar to her level.
Yeah, lumping 18 in with the rest of them was a weird call.
Yeah, I mean,
because, yeah, 18 definitely can't, it is not as strong as some of the other Saiyans at play, but she is still powerful.
No, she's still powerful than every other human, like, other than the Saiyans, she is the most powerful combatant they've got. And also, like, I feel like she could be useful in training. But you know what? No, they're all useless. Bulma says screw that and beats them all at cards. So we're getting the, you know, the hand you're dealt metaphor is literal. Her hand is better than any of their hands. She beats them at cards.
I like that they were using official Mr. Satan playing cards.
Yeah, where the ace is Mr. Satan as an angel.
Yeah, just all the face cards are just Mr. Satan in different outfits.
Yeah. So Goku gets to Otherworld, and it is super busy. Apparently souls in the Dragon Ball world are tiny little white cotton balls. And there are tiny white cotton balls lined up from here all the way back to Earth, basically. And King Yemma wants to know what's going on, what is happening on Earth, and Goku's like, oh, don't worry, pretty soon everybody on Earth is gonna be here. And Yemma's like, what? He's like, oh, not a big deal. Anyway, where's Gohan? And King Yemma's like, Gohan's not here. And Goku's very happy to find out his son's alive. He's like, that's awesome. Videl was right. Super great. And Yemma says, by the way, though, I did have Deborah, the king of all demons, through here recently. I didn't want to send him to hell where I normally send someone that bad. I wanted to screw with him, so I sent him to heaven. And Goku's like, that's awesome. That's the actual line, that's awesome. I have some questions about that in a minute. Nobody asks about Vegeta.
No. Yeah, that really struck me as like, the only thing we know about Vegeta in the afterlife is Piccolo's hypothesis.
Right.
That he would just get reincarnated and his essence would be destroyed. But we don't actually, that's just Piccolo. That's just Piccolo saying stuff.
And Piccolo does know more than the average person. He was like half of Kami for a bit, and Kami resides within him. So it's not like he's talking out of nowhere.
No, but still.
But, well, also Goku wasn't there for that conversation. Like,
also
you
that.
Think he'd ask. He does not. Meanwhile, Gohan's training. But more importantly, Goku is able to feel Gohan's energy training from Otherworld. He knows he's not dead, but he's in Otherworld, so Goku is going to go find him. Meanwhile, Gohan is still training. That's what happened this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai. What happened this week on Gilmore Girls?
Okay, so as you mentioned, this is the Vineyard Valentine episode of Gilmore Girls, which I am told is generally considered among the Gilmore Girls fan base to be the worst episode of the series.
Either the worst or one of the worst. I mean, there's still some competition. There are some that I enjoy less, honestly, but this one's not good.
So the thing that we don't see in this episode, but clearly happens just before the cameras start to roll, is that every single member of the cast is abducted by aliens and replaced with a body double.
Yes.
Nobody acts in character in this episode, but basically this is an episode that really does just kind of have the one premise, where it's Valentine's Day, this is the weekend before Valentine's Day, and everyone's making their plans. And most importantly, Logan kind of spur of the moment is like, hey, let's go to my parents' place in Martha's Vineyard. It's not, you know, nobody's there right now. We can go hang out for the weekend. It'll be a great time. We can have a nice Valentine's Day. Because Rory's been go, 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 doing a million things because she's trying to catch up for the time she lost when she wasn't in school. And Logan's like, hey, the stuff you're doing is important, but we need to slow down for a minute. Like, you need a break. Let's take a break. Let's go. And Rory's like, okay, but I promised my mom I would at least make time to have dinner with her this weekend. He says, okay, invite your mom. Invite Luke. Let's go. Let's just go and have a good time, the four of us at Martha's Vineyard. It'll be great. They agree to do this, right? Lorelai initially is like, I don't know if Luke will want to do it, because Luke isn't really a Valentine's Day guy. He's just, you know, he just says, oh, it's just to sell greeting cards. And also, she's just been feeling kind of weird about everything with Luke because he's still spending a lot of time with April, but not letting her in on any of that.
Yeah.
And also, like, her whole, I'm going to keep some of the dates and stuff for the wedding and see if he changes his mind plan backfired. And now she's lost her deposits on a bunch of places. But she talks Luke into it. They decide to go. But Luke is, for the whole first half of this episode, Luke is just kind of grumpy. He's like, not sure about going to Martha's Vineyard. He's not sure about the drive. He's not sure about Logan. Like, where do they stand? And Luke is weirdly preoccupied with this notion that Rory and Logan are going to break up while they're there on the weekend.
Yeah.
Even though, like, he's not been given anything to make him believe that, other than the fact that they broke up and got back together and then moved in really quickly.
Yeah.
But he's weirdly preoccupied with this notion that it's going to happen while they're there.
Yeah.
And we're never really given any backup as to why he believes that. So they drive there, and then there's a weird scene where it's like, hey, Logan and I are going to go to the gym. Do you want to come with us? Like, Luke's being weird, okay? He brought all his survival gear, and, like, he eats a power bar in the room instead of going out and eating the breakfast that Rory and Logan made for him and told them that they were going to make. And he's just generally acting really cagey. There's a bit when they first arrive where Rory's like, hey, in the morning we can either eat here or we can go to this diner that opens at 8. And Logan's like, oh, they actually open at 7. It's like, oh, yeah, they open at 7. So then later Luke gets on Lorelai's case of, like, how could he embarrass her like that?
Yeah.
Like, he humiliated Rory in front of us. It's like, Luke, what the fuck are you talking about?
And he brings his survivalist stuff and then, like, acts like he isn't allowed to go out into the common areas after dark because he might see them having sex. And to be fair, he's seen them having sex in a side room before. It was super awkward. But, like, he acts like they're going to bring him to a murderer cabin in the woods when, up until this point, like, Luke has had a lot of experience with rich people through Rory and Lorelai. And, like, his attitude to it has been more, I don't like it because it's too fancy, not, I have to bring my literal Bowie knife. Like, it was really weird.
Yeah, so Luke's just acting really fucking weird the whole episode, the whole first half of the episode. And then they go to the gym.
Yeah.
And so there's, like, Lorelai and Rory have a little bit of bonding time where they talk about, like, wedding stuff. While drinking cucumber water and getting massages from people who aren't there to give massages.
It was super creepy.
Super creepy.
Super creepy.
Yeah, they're just totally down with these random guys volunteering to touch the pretty ladies. And then we also get, like, Logan and Luke playing basketball. And Logan is literally dunking on Luke the entire time. and like trying to be nice about it, of like, oh, I was fouling you, or like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to score, which is like, it's this weird mix of like Logan genuinely feeling bad, because like when you are competing with somebody and you are stomping them really badly and it's supposed to be friendly, you do feel a little bad.
Oh, you feel bad.
Yeah, like, I feel bad. Like, I feel bad when, like, I'm playing Smash Bros. With somebody or something and I win really hard. It's like, no.
Well, the other day I was at work and they had a movie trivia game. And it was, like, a friendly competition. And it was, like, a team that's connected to ours, but it's not our team. And I went in because, like, I like movie trivia. That sounded, like, fun. It soon became very awkward because I was winning by a lot. To the point where no one could catch me, and it was like, I am so sorry. Do you want me to get a couple wrong? Because I'm not going to, but I'm tempted to, because I feel bad.
Yeah, like, it's awkward. It's awkward when you enter into a friendly game of something that you actually are really good at.
You want to have fun, and you want the other person to have fun.
Yeah, it's like, I want to have fun, right? And so I want to play my best. But also, like, I don't want to make you feel bad. But then also, I know that if I dial it down and let you win, like...
That's not fun. That's awkward.
Yeah, that's not fun for me. And, like, I'm not going to insult your intelligence by making you think you wouldn't notice. And so it's an awkward situation. So it's a weird mix between that and also just, like, I don't know, Logan's laying it on a little bit too thick, where I almost wonder if the intention was that it was supposed to be douchier and Matt Zuckery didn't quite act it the way that it was intended.
Yeah, it's really weird, because it's not even like we can say that, like, well, there's a miscommunication between the writer and the director.
No, this was written and directed by Daniel Palladino.
So...
I don't know what happened there. So then, like, later when they're alone again, Luke is talking to Lorelai about how much he can't stand Logan, and he's like, yeah, he was being really annoying the whole time we were playing basketball. Like, he was fouling on me and not calling it, and he was, like, trying to cheat on the score.
Yeah, so he just completely rewrites.
Yeah, like, all the stuff that Logan didn't actually do, so, like, Luke's making shit up to make Logan sound worse because he's grumpy, which, like, is not a Luke move.
No, he's grumpy in different ways.
Yeah, and so it's like, I am down with people talking shit about Logan, but not here, where Logan was actually being, like, pretty reasonable in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, this stretch of episodes, Logan's actually been pretty reasonable and, like, nice.
I have a theory about this that we can get to later.
Yeah. Well, I also, like, hold on. Let me finish my summary here.
Yeah, no, so that's why I'll get to it later.
They get to dinner time, and, like, Logan's making lobster, and Lorelai and Rory are working on all the sides and stuff, and Luke goes out there.
Yeah, we have to talk about Rory being out of character, because suddenly she goes to the gym and she's a domestic goddess when it comes to cooking.
Yeah, apparently. Because
this is not like Rory in season one, where she put on an apron and did the Donna Reed thing and like put together two biscuits. This is like
she's actually cooking
a spread of food. Despite, like, and it seems like she's learned this over going to Huntsburgers for stuff, but we've never, like, seen any of this before. And this isn't, like, yeah. We'll have to talk about how Rory and Logan operate in Martha's Vineyard.
So Logan's making lobster, and there is actually kind of a funny through line to the second half of the episode where Luke's never had lobster before, and then he eats it and realizes how much he loves lobster, and so he's like, when we get married, there's gonna be lobster at the wedding.
Yeah, more on that later.
He goes out there with Logan. And Logan, like, here's where I feel like Logan finally reaches the equilibrium between the Logan we've known and the Logan of the last couple episodes.
Fair.
Because he settles into well-meaning douchebag in this episode.
Yeah.
Because he's like, hey, just so you know, I'm going to, like, do the present thing during dinner. And Luke's like, oh, you mean like a Valentine's Day present? He's like, yeah, did you not get her? Did you not get Lorelai anything? He's like, no, I didn't. It's like, oh, well, I mean, I got Rory two presents, and so she doesn't need both presents. You can take one of my presents.
Which, already, why are you giving this present at dinner? Like, why can't you give it to her in private? But whatever.
Yeah, like, for one, you're going to stunt on everybody and give it during dinner. Like, the obvious, like, yeah, the nice guy solution there is, oh, never mind, I'll give it to her privately so that I don't make things awkward. But no, it's, I'm so rich, I don't even need one of these expensive presents for my girlfriend. Here, you take it. And Luke doesn't even try to be like, I'll pay you back for it or anything. He's just like, sure, and he takes it.
And it's not like a cheap bracelet. Like, these are diamond, like, it's diamond jewelry, and Luke doesn't offer to cut him a check right there and then.
Yeah, it's...
Like, Luke might not have money for that, but Luke would absolutely try.
Yeah, like I said, there was no discussion of it. And when he's like, oh, thanks, you don't need to do this, Logan's like, oh, don't worry, us men gotta stick together.
Yeah, it's so Which weird. Is like,
that is definitely, definitely a line you have used when agreeing to cover up for your buddy's sexual assault.
Yeah.
100%. 100%, I guarantee you, Logan Huntsberger has said that exact same thing in much darker circumstances.
But I feel like he's also said that, like, let's, yes, garden variety, horrible men crimes, yes. Also, when, like, Finn accidentally let a tiger out of the zoo because he thought it'd be fun and it ate, like, five people, also happened.
Also happened. Yeah, so we reach douchey Logan equilibrium where it's like, okay, you mean well, but you're still a fucking douchebag. This I can live with. Yeah, so that happens. They give these bracelets. It's like, oh, they match and come in the same boxes, but that's not suspicious because Logan actually covers and is like, oh, we bought them in the same place. All right, cool, whatever. They just happen to match, and then Luke and Lorelai have this conversation alone later in their room where Lorelai just kind of randomly jumps into, like, I feel like we're never going to get married.
Oh, there's one little thing before that. When Rory is watching Luke, I think this is before that, when Rory is watching Luke and Logan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's like, hey, it just occurred to me, to Lorelai. She's like, hey, it just occurred to me, these two could be the ones.
It's like, well, and I think Luke is probably the one since they're getting married, but...
Yeah, and Lorelai seems a little bit perturbed by that.
Yeah, both that Logan could be Rory's one and that she doesn't know how this...
Yeah, she's worried that Luke might not end up being Lorelai's one for reasons that aren't thoroughly clear. So, a thing happens that it almost felt like it felt weird at first because it hasn't happened in so long, but then... Once I realized what was happening, it felt right. They talk about their feelings.
No.
Lorelai's like, I feel like we're never going to get married, which I still don't totally understand where that came from, but sure, whatever, fine. She's feeling it and she's talking about it. And Luke's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, look, I know I've been really distracted with stuff with April, and I know that that's not good, and I've been kind of shutting you out, and I'm like that, and I don't like that I'm like that, and I'm sorry. But I promise you, I still love you, and I still want to marry you. And she says something that I really love that she says. She says, I know, but I still need to hear it every once in a while.
Yeah, so Luke doesn't really say I love you to Lorelai. Like, I saw someone suggest that this might be the only time in the show that he says it.
Yeah, just because he's not the kind of guy who gets mushy about his feelings, which there's nothing wrong with not being the kind of person who gets mushy about your feelings, but you need to find a balance between that. And not letting, like, making sure the people in your life know how you feel, because even though you know, like, logically you know somebody loves you, it still matters to hear it sometimes. And so I like that this, like, very basic human need is being communicated on TV, and Luke takes it in and understands it. And Lorelai says, like, I'm sorry, I hoped that maybe some time you'd change your mind, and I waited too long, and I lost all our deposits on everything, and I freaked out, and I'm sorry. And Luke just says, that's okay. Like, Luke understands this is a really weird thing that's happening right now. Him having a daughter, it's weird, nobody quite knows how to handle it. It's okay, whatever, fine, that money's gone, we will raise new deposits, we can even elope if you want. Like, I want to marry you, it's just things are a little crazy right now, but I promise I still love you, I promise this is still going to happen. And Lorelai seems to be, like, put at ease about this. So, we get to the next morning.
Yeah, but I want to emphasize one more time, this crappy episode is the first time and possibly the only time in the entire series that we hear Luke say I love you to Lorelai.
It's true.
Like, I know that's not his style, but, like, they put it in here in the middle of this episode and then don't make a big deal over it, especially when Lorelai has commitment issues.
Yeah, like, the implication is definitely that he has said it to her, right?
Right, it's not the first time.
It hasn't been on camera, but, yeah, like...
It's a weird thing to choose to have off camera.
Yeah, it was weird.
Sorry, I just want my frustration there noted.
So they wake up the next morning to like, bed and breakfast waiting outside their door, and then as they're eating and everything, Mitchum Huntsberger, Logan's father, busts in and is like, "Who are you?" He's like, "I'm Rory's mother. Who are you?" He's like, "I'm Mitchum Huntsberger. Where's my son?" And they go down, and Logan and Mitchum get into a screaming match in the living room of this cabin, where apparently the reason Logan wanted to get away this weekend was because he was supposed to go to London to meet some of his father's business associates, and he just fucking skipped out on his family obligations to go screw around in Martha's Vineyard and, like, completely left Mitchum high and dry with a bunch of people. So here's where it all comes out that, oh, the reason that Logan hasn't been that bad since he's come back into Rory's life is because he's been living in complete denial about the things happening around him.
Yup.
Like, oh, he's being nicer because he's just decided fuck it to all of his responsibilities. And still, once again, we're back to square one with Logan, where he wants to have all of the advantages and comforts associated with his privilege without any of the responsibilities.
Yup. Although it is fair to say that Mitchum has decided what those responsibilities look like for him, what that timeline is. And 100%. He has had no say in his own future.
100%. Everyone sucks in this situation.
Everyone sucks here.
Everyone sucks here, right? Yeah, I'm not defending Mitchum.
No.
The way Mitchum is treating his son is terrible. The way Mitchum is handling it is terrible. Not letting your children decide what their future is going to be is terrible. Like, Mitchum is a bad father. But
Logan's not dealing with his problems.
Logan, like, at a certain point, you need to stop putting your problems on your parents and start working with the hand that you're dealt. You can never change who the people in your life are. Like,
well, you can cut them out, but
yeah, but you can't change a person, right?
Yes. Yes.
You can't make your parents, you can't make your parents be something they're not.
No.
And Mitchum is never going to be what Logan wants him to be. And his choices are to go along with it, which is not good for his mental health and he shouldn't do, or tell his dad, go fuck yourself, and live with the consequences, even if those consequences involve losing his trust fund. Like, sorry, those are your choices. Be a fucking adult and pick one. And instead, he's choosing the middle path of just kind of keep fucking around and pretend his problems aren't there.
It is not fight or flight. It is freeze.
Yeah, and Rory earlier in the episode had told Lorelai that they were talking about, like, taking a big 6-week vacation around Asia when they graduated.
Yep. Or when he graduated.
When he graduates. But Mitchum is like, you're going to get on a plane, you're going to go back to London, and as soon as you graduate, you're going to do a year in London like the plan says.
Yep.
And so Rory's like, hey, were you going to tell me about this spending a year in London thing, or are you just going to let me keep researching our trip to Asia? And Logan's like, let's not worry about that. It's only February. June is far away. It might not even happen. Let's not worry about it. Keep planning the trip to Asia.
And I now realize that he's doing the exact same thing Lorelai is, and they don't do a good job of pulling out the parallels, which makes me so mad.
Uh-huh. Yes, we'll get there.
I'm so mad now.
So Logan leaves to go to London, and everybody goes home, and it's awkward. Logan and Lorelai do have a very brief moment where Lorelai's like, hey, I know what it's like to disappoint my parents. And then that conversation gets cut short. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That could have been interesting, but we didn't get it. They go back to the diner, and Caesar has a message for Luke of like, hey, your daughter called. She's going to be by at 3 tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Luke's like, oh, okay. So she'll be here at 3, so she'll probably leave around 7. And Lorelai's like, yeah, I won't come by until after that. And Luke's like, okay, cool. So it's like Lorelai's still put out. That's like, oh, we have this nice connection, but you're still not letting me meet your daughter.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, I'm just gonna walk home, and leaves. And Luke is, again, totally unfazed by this, doesn't realize anything is wrong.
Yeah.
And then she gets home, and her answering machine is blown the fuck up, because Emily put out an engagement, like a wedding announcement, in the newspaper for the June 3rd date that she already missed all her deposits on. And so now Lorelai's entire extended family and like everybody in the DAR and all of high society on the Gilmore side is convinced a wedding is going to happen in June that isn't going to happen.
Yep.
And that is where this episode ends.
Yep, yep.
So what did you think of this week's Dragon Ball Z?
You know, it was there. It had some really nice moments. Goku hugging Goten, nice moment. Chi-Chi yelling that she will kill Goku, even though he's already dead, super great. One moment I forgot to mention, Goku saying goodbye with, "Gonna miss you guys, see you when you die." Beautiful, fantastic, beautiful, amazing, on point. At the same time, I'm so frustrated. Like, they at least hung a lampshade on it, but with Goku making the decision to spend his time going Super Saiyan 3, stupid. Asking Piccolo to teach fusion when Piccolo has never actually seen or experienced fusion, stupider. Pooping Boo, stupidest. This episode had that, and before you say it's because we didn't have, like, you know, we had too much time, let me just say for a moment that we get a half second of Deborah trying to be in hell and then the decision to put him in heaven, which is a whole episode in and of itself. I know this is Kai and we don't really do filler, but I would watch that episode before I would watch another 30 minutes of Boo, where I'm pretty sure if we shove all the Boo we got together, we've got more than 30 minutes. And I feel like there were, like, lack of forethought and missed opportunities were rife in this episode.
See, you're absolutely right that I wish we saw more Deborah.
I want Deborah in hell, if they're or heaven. His
totally.
Hell.
Like, you're right that I would love to see Deborah in heaven. That's great. In general, I wish we got a little bit more Deborah, because it seems like there's a little bit more to be had out of his character, and he usually just gets relegated to being a minion.
Yeah.
But I think that even if there are parts of this episode that are weird, I feel like this is an episode where every scene had a clear purpose.
What was the purpose of Roshi declaring himself useless? Now, seasons after, that's a relevant statement.
Now, it being seasons after, it's an irrelevant statement, is not great. But I do think, even if a purpose might be a strong word, but it was nice to get a moment for these characters that have been kind of shunted off to the sideline for them to kind of reflect on how far things have expanded since they were around and how they are just kind of relegated to support. And it was kind of funny to just be like, well, and here's Roshi, Krillin, and Bulma just playing cards. And I liked the point that you made. I like that Bulma is the one to say we can still help when Bulma is the one who's been helping despite not being a fighter this whole time. Like, it was a nice moment for those characters.
Yes, but we get Roshi saying that for everyone else who are all more powerful than him. So it just feels like he's declaring what's true for everyone when it's really not. And when Bulma pushes back and says, I don't think that's right, we jump away really quickly before she can, like, go into why she doesn't think that's right. And we know that's true for her because she has tech as her thing. But, like, I would have preferred a version of this scene where she's like, yeah, I guess you are useless, Roshi. Gonna go off to get my dragon radar and upgrade it. It's like, yes, you are irrelevant. I'm not. But instead we just got her saying, I don't think that's true, and then beating them at cards.
Yeah, I mean, like all Dragon Ball character moments, I wish we'd gotten just a little bit more.
But we didn't really get that much out of it, just because it's Roshi declaring what's true for the rest of the fighters, and Bulma saying no, and that's it. I want more than that. If you're going to give me a little bit, you have to actually dig into what that means.
That's fair. I appreciated the effort, at least.
That's fair.
And I know we've kind of been over this before, but I actually found the whole Boo bit in this episode pretty charming.
I might have if they hadn't given me so many, like, episodes of Boo before this.
Yeah, I can see how Boo has spent all of his goodwill at this point, but
I just hear his voice and there's crawling in my skin.
I liked this Boo episode, though, because him turning everybody to clay, right? Because it's just like, oh, Boo's tired. Like, I'm tired. I've been blowing shit up. I'm going to take a nap. I'll take a nap here. Well, wait, I need a house first. So I'm going to turn everybody into clay and build a house. We get this actually kind of cute little segment of him just being like, do-do-do-do-do, while he's building his little house out of clay.
Yeah.
And then that house is like two weird nightmare worms on top of each other, but made out of clay.
Yeah, I just kind of feel about this episode the way you felt about Logan, in the last minute, let's put out a newspaper episode where it's like, I want to like this, but I've already like used up all of my goodwill and I have none. I have no goodwill here. It's cute and fun and funny. I did not need to see him pooping.
Here's the thing, right? One, the pajama song is just beautiful and you're wrong, all right? Two, that segment of it being like Boo talking to the camera like it's MTV Cribs about like, this is where Boo eats and this is where Boo brushes his teeth and washes his face and gets pretty looking.
Like
and
I this said, is Elmo's World.
It was a little bit like that, yeah, but it's continuing this through line that admittedly has not been very well established, but that we have been able to chart of Boo's trying to be a normal person.
Right.
Boo doesn't need to sleep, right? Like when he sleeps, he just goes with a little snot bubble for like 5 seconds and then wakes up and goes, I feel much better. Like it's just him performing sleep because he's just trying to be a normal person and he doesn't understand how that works. And so it's not Boo pooping. It's Boo being like, this is where I would poop because that's what humans do, right? Humans poop. So I need a toilet, right? And so, like, it's silly and it's funny and it's fun and it's dumb, but it also is just this change where Boo is starting to try to become more like a person and is becoming a little more innocent is, on the one hand, Boo's becoming more sadistic, but on the other hand, Boo's also trying to be more like a person, and these two things are happening at the same time in a weird diverging way that is interesting to watch and is important.
I wish, like, but the thing is, I wish they established that a little bit better, because Boo terrorizing someone while trying to figure out their daily routine and going through their house would be a great scene. But we don't get that. We just get suddenly that he decides he needs a house. And he suddenly knows how people work, even though there's no reason that, like, I know this is like, how does he eat and breathe and other science facts, but like, how did Boo ever see how normal people interact with life? When would Boo ever see someone brushing their teeth?
Yeah, that is a plot hole, but like you said, whatever, it's a show. You're 100% right. Neither of us are wrong here, I think, right? Like, yes, it needed to be better established, but there is still something there.
And it needed to happen before all my goodwill was gone, because when you can sum up what's happened previously, not with Boo trying to figure out what people are, but with Boo bouncing around for 30 seconds making noise, that explains why we're not ready to go on this journey with you when you get us here.
Yeah, I wish that there'd been more of the Boo trying to figure people out while he was under Bobbity's control.
That would be great.
And Bobbity just telling him, like, don't worry about that. Why do you care? You're just here to destroy things.
That would be great.
And yeah, so like, that is true. And therefore, all of the stuff I'm saying is a little bit Weebs with Ice Machines. But it's still there, and it warrants pointing out, even if it doesn't salvage the episode, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, and that's fair. I have gotten to the point where Boo's voice is nails on a chalkboard, and I want him off my screen. I don't care what he's doing. I don't care how cute his pajama song is. Get him out of here.
I love his pajamas. And his pajamas themselves. Boo, I thought Boo was cute in this episode.
I just can't see it anymore.
I thought that whole Boo MTV Cribs montage was cute.
In a vacuum, yes.
But the real cute in this episode was Goten saying goodbye to Goku.
Yeah.
That was good.
And I do appreciate that they did nail the feeling of kids where Trunks would get bored and tired of this thing that's not working after 5 minutes. He wants to seem like a super serious warrior in front of this super serious warrior that his dad respected. But also, why doesn't he just give us Super Saiyan 3 right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, I feel like that moment made sense too, because it was the kid logic of like, okay, if I give you what you want, will you promise to work super hard from here out? And he's like, yeah. I was like, okay, I've only got like 10, 15 minutes left anyway. I wasn't going to be able to get much more done here in those 15 minutes. So I might as well give him what he wants if that's going to make him more focused, and then hand it off to Piccolo.
Yeah, but he could have used that time telling Piccolo how to actually train them in fusion.
Piccolo's been watching, though, so I feel like Piccolo has enough. Piccolo knows about as much as Goku does at this point, because Goku's also never done it. He's just seen it done.
He's seen it done, but Piccolo hasn't seen it done. Like, yeah. And he, like, keeps remembering all these little details that he forgot. Like, you need to breathe together. You need to get your finger pointing. Like, there seem to be a lot of intricate little bits that aren't apparent from the outside immediately.
Yeah. The handing off of fusion training from Goku to Piccolo has to also be, like, it's just a show type thing where it's like, okay, he's a great warrior, martial artist. By watching somebody demonstrate it a few times, he can also watch somebody and teach somebody. Like, you just kind of have to roll with it.
Okay. Okay. What did you think of Gilmore Girls?
You know, I can think of several episodes of Gilmore Girls that I hated more than this episode of Gilmore Girls. I'm going to be honest.
Which ones are you going to list here?
Any episode with Francie in it.
Yep.
Which I think is only two, but those definitely hated more than this. The episode where Rory steals a yacht, yep, hated more than this. Honestly, maybe the Life and Death Brigade episode. I know a lot of people really
wondering if you're going to say that.
I know a lot of people like that episode, but they're wrong. That episode's terrible, and I hate it, and it's awful. Yeah, I gotta say, like, don't get me wrong. This episode was bad, but it was like a benign sort of bad, where it's just like everybody's kind of acting weird and out of character. Characters' emotions are changing from scene to scene with not a whole lot of explanation. Like, it's a badly written episode, but I think it might just be because I had how bad this episode is hyped up to me. I was expecting something really infuriating to happen.
I think the thing that to focus on, though, is the complete character assassination that Luke gets. Because everybody's out of character. Rory shouldn't be making food like this. But Luke's is ridiculous.
Yeah, but Luke's has been ridiculous for a couple episodes now. Yeah, like, I'm used to terrible Luke now.
But this goes past terrible Luke. This goes to Luke has never been outside in his life. Like, Luke, who is an outdoorsman who enjoys camping and goes fishing in all seasons and has lived in Connecticut all his life and enjoys fishing, has never eaten a lobster. Even though, like it's not just a fancy thing. You could go out, you know, and get lobster.
Yeah, he's never had, like, an $8 lobster roll somewhere.
No. He doesn't know to wear warm clothes when he goes out in February. He acts like going to this rich person's cabin is going to be like going into the middle of the woods, and he can't go, like, he can't interact with human beings anymore. Like, the levels of absurdity of things that Luke doesn't know is a weird starting point, but then also that they try to portray a 22-year-old who, like, a highly irresponsible 22-year-old as more on the ball than he is, just because reasons. Where, you know, Luke, who kept a horoscope in his wallet for 8 years, doesn't think that giving his fiance a Valentine's present might be important when he knows that Lorelai thinks that special days are special. He lets a 22-year-old give him something to give his own girlfriend and doesn't try to offer to pay him for it. He has that super awkward basketball game when we've seen him play sports with his, like, with Rory's boyfriend, who he doesn't like before, and it's been more fun than that. Like, all of these things, it feels like either are completely out of character for Luke, or he's done them before and they've done it better.
Yeah. I don't think any of those things are as bad as him flipping his fucking lid at the answering machine message from Christopher, though.
Fair.
Like, this is not the worst Luke character assassination. This is not the worst Logan being a douche. This is not the worst, like, everything in this episode is bad, but every individual bad thing in this episode has been done worse in other episodes.
But it is all together.
I feel relatively neutral about this episode, honestly. It was bad. I didn't enjoy it. I don't really think there's anything that's worth really digging up and dissecting, though, except the one frustrating thing that is, you already mentioned it. This frustrating thing that is really good potential that could have saved this episode and got left on the table is that they draw this really clear parallel between Lorelai and Logan and then do jack shit with it.
Yep.
Because Lorelai and Logan are both in denial about a thing happening and or not happening in June, and it's February, and they were just kind of hoping if they pretended it wasn't happening, it would fix itself.
Yeah.
And here we see for both of them that it doesn't work, and that they both get screwed, in different ways. And for Lorelai, it ends up being okay, because at the end of the... I think the reason why I'm okay with Luke's character assassination is because he kind of comes back at the end in that conversation he has with Lorelai.
Yeah.
And, like, Luke is okay with it. He forgives her. He understands this is a weird time. And they move past it and their relationship is stronger for it.
Except that, you know, the April stuff is still happening.
Except the April stuff is still happening, but whatever, right? Whereas for Logan, it is clear that Rory is deeply hurt by all of this.
Yeah.
And they almost have a conversation about it, and then they don't. It's like, this could have been an opportunity to draw that parallel, to make me feel more sympathy for Logan, to make me feel more sympathy for Lorelai when she's been crazy the last couple episodes, and to retroactively make everything with, like, Logan and Lorelai and the letter possibly make sense. Like, that would have been a time to go mm-hmm. back and backfill and explain what happened in that scene.
Yep.
And all of that got squandered. So I feel like that's actually this episode's biggest sin.
Everything but instead, else... we got a scene of, like, 5 minutes of Lorelai making whale penis jokes and yeah. reading about Martha's Vineyard like this is supposed to sell us on our next great vacation destination.
Yeah. So, like, everything else about this episode, whatever. People were written out of character. It was bad. Whatever. Maybe I'm just gone. Maybe I'm just numb. Like, maybe I've just become callous to it. But I expect all of these things out of season 6 of Gilmore Girls. That is the biggest disappointment for me. That there was real potential for something cool in this episode. They didn't take it. And as a result, this episode just kind of exists. The only thing that matters in this episode is the last scene where Emily apparently took an ad out in the newspaper. Everything else in this episode was superfluous.
I don't think it's quite fair to say it's superfluous, and this is, once again, information you don't have yet, but it is important to notice that they have been driving Luke to the gutter for the last couple of episodes. Like, ever since this April thing popped up, they're trying to make him more and more buffoonish, more and more ridiculous, and this episode is on display the entire episode. But last episode, we got Christopher, who at the vow renewal was an absolute horror show. They're kind of turning around on him now. Now he's together. Now he's got money. Now he gets along with Rory's boyfriend and likes Rory's boyfriend. While Luke is just, he's aggressive towards him for very reasonable reasons that are shown as unreasonable in this episode. So they are definitely playing one up and playing the other down.
But you don't get credit for that if they're not in the same episode.
No, you don't. But I, like, this is not, like, I think they should get credit for it, but I think that it's worth noting that this is something they're quietly doing and they're building up right now.
Yes, but, oh, like, also...
I'm not saying they get credit.
But also, like, Luke has been driven to the gutter already coming into this episode.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Again, the driving him further into the gutter in this episode is superfluous.
But I think what they're trying to do, and they shouldn't get credit for, is, like, making the viewer subconsciously think about how one is better and one is worse with Logan. Because this is the first time we've really seen Luke and Logan interact since.
For sure.
Like, who knows when?
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Everything you're saying is true. I'm just saying that from a plot perspective, other than that last scene, if you took this episode out, nothing has changed.
True.
Nothing has changed.
True.
They tried to make a thing of, like, what? You're going to go to London after you graduate? But, like, only because they also inserted the trip to Asia thing before it?
Yep.
And so, like, they removed a problem only to add it back in at the end of the episode. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, this episode didn't need to happen. I'm convinced it was just to, like, get tourism money from Martha's Vineyard.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was not a good episode. Everything about it was bad. But I don't know if I would call it worst episode of the show. It was just benignly terrible. Do you have any questions for me about Dragon Ball Z Kai?
Yeah. Why didn't Goku ask about Vegeta?
That's a great question. I feel like the closest thing to a no prize I have that is not a good no prize is that Goku has either one, Goku kind of already knows because he knows about as much about the afterlife as Piccolo, and so why ask when he already knows the answer? Or
right.
Two, Goku has always been very optimistic about Vegeta. Maybe he just assumed, you know, Vegeta did some bad stuff, but he turned it around at the end. I'm sure I'll bump into him in the other world.
Right. And that is lower priority than asking about his son, but higher and especially, priority than Deborah.
Especially, well, he didn't ask about Deborah. Yemma just randomly mentioned him.
Well, I know, but you'd think that Deborah would remind him of Vegeta.
You'd think he would remind him of Vegeta, but I could also see Goku not thinking of Vegeta, especially after being told that Gohan's not dead. Then it's like, okay, finding Vegeta isn't going to help anybody. Vegeta's just as dead as I am. But if Gohan's still alive and if I can find him, then boom, we got a plan B if fusion doesn't work.
Right. So Deborah wouldn't enjoy hell because he's the king there. So they sent him to heaven to make his life worse.
Hell is very similar to the demon world. So.
Okay, it's very similar. Sorry. This is my Christian theology getting mixed up in there.
Yeah, so if he went to hell, he'd just be like, oh, this is just like home.
But instead he gets sent to heaven because he will not enjoy that. What about the other people in heaven who were having a perfectly nice time and now are stuck with the king of the demons?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish we'd get to see a little bit of that. Yeah, because I wonder how that works. Is it like a deal where like violence isn't allowed in heaven, so he's just surrounded by obnoxious goody-goody people, but he can't punch them? Because that would definitely be hell.
Right, or he has his own little private heaven, so no one else has to deal with him.
The other thing is that, like, later on, we learn that hell is very specifically tailored. Like, this episode in general is a great encapsulation of how the cosmology and afterlife of Dragon Ball changes from episode to episode.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you're going to ask me about the sentient clouds in a minute.
Yeah.
Because later on, in the, like, way later movies that we're going to watch to go along with Year in the Life, we see Frieza in hell. And Frieza's hell is he's trapped in a cocoon where he's completely immobilized, hanging from a tree, while happy little stuffed animals dance in a circle around him and sing the same song over and over again for eternity.
Fair.
Right? Like, that is Frieza's hell. So, clearly, there are places in hell that can be used to torture people with niceness. So why not just do that to Deborah?
Good question. And he is big enough to merit it, like the king
of the demons.
Totally,
he's the king of the demons, and he murdered a bunch of people.
Right.
So
if
like
Frieza gets it.
Yeah, so there are questions to be had there.
Yeah, so what about the, like, cotton ball souls? Because that's not what Goku's soul looked like.
Yeah, well, okay, so here, there are layers. There are layers to how this doesn't make any sense, all right? Let's go all the way back.
Okay.
Let's go back to the beginning of Z.
Okay.
Goku dies fighting Raditz.
Yep.
Everyone's like, oh no, Goku's dead. And then while they're mourning over Goku's body, you may have forgotten this, but it happened. While they're mourning over Goku's body, it vanishes.
Right.
Like Star Wars.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, I guess he'll get to keep his body in the afterlife. King Yama must need him. And so then he shows up in the afterlife with his body, and he's like, cool, they let me keep my body so I can go train with King Kai.
Okay, so most people don't get that. They're just, their souls go up.
But, when Tien and Chiaotzu and Yamcha and Piccolo died, they explicitly talk about finding their bodies, they get a funeral, they bury their bodies, etc., etc., etc. But yet, we later see them at King Kai's planet, but their bodies didn't disappear like Star Wars.
That so it's doesn't like, make sense.
You kind of do, but you kind of don't, right? And then, but then, I want to say we've seen random normies in line at King Yama's desk before, and it was just random people in robes or whatever. Like, I feel like we've seen people that aren't the Z Fighters in line at King Yama's desk. I might be remembering that wrong.
Maybe I've got a reasoning for this. What if there's a loading time?
Is a loading time till you get your body back?
Right, there's a loading time to get your body back. If you don't have your physical body, it takes you a second to turn into a puff to a person. But right now, the system's overloaded. They don't have enough RAM. It's continuously buffering, so everybody stays puffballs, because right now we are told they have more people in other world than ever before. They don't have time to remember what all their bodies look like.
That could be.
It's best I got.
So yeah, that's the best I got too.
Okay. What have you got about Gilmore Girls?
So was this episode just an ad for Martha's Vineyard?
I couldn't find anything about that either way. While I was searching, I did find out about an interesting guest, like another Gilmore Girls pre-cameo that we'll have next week, but I have nothing on whether or not this was selling Martha's Vineyard. If anyone has any information, please write in. I want to know. Because there were definitely a lot of, like, tourist information got dropped that they got paid to drop, and then a lot of loving stock footage shots of Martha's Vineyard. So if they weren't getting paid, they should have been.
Yeah. All my other questions are one you can't answer. Just like, why is everyone acting so out of character? How has Luke never eaten a lobster? There's no good answer to these questions. It just doesn't make any sense.
Why does Lorelai say that Rory hasn't worn an apron since Sound of Music when we had the Donna Reed episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of good questions. But none of them will get answered this week.
Nope, they won't. Do you know who you want to swap this week?
Actually, I'll swap Master Roshi and Logan.
Okay.
I want to see Roshi getting along with Grumpy Luke up on the beach, because I think either Luke would, like, if Roshi's asleep, then they'd get along better. And if Roshi's awake, then it would be even worse for Luke. But meanwhile, like, imagine Logan sitting playing cards with everyone else, and they're like, well, I guess we can't beat them, right? He's like, no, man. Boo's not here yet. Let's just keep playing cards. We're having a good time here playing cards. Who do you want to swap?
So this episode, I want to swap Luke and Boo.
Okay.
Because Luke was in a really grumpy mood and was satiated by getting a new kind of tasty treat that he wasn't expecting, namely lobster, right?
Right.
Whereas Boo, that's like Boo's whole shtick, right? So right. You drop Boo in the middle of like this little bumpkin country town wherever he was at, and everyone is just kind of rolling around in their trucks, and it was a small town that he invaded to make his house. Luke's right at home there. He'd settle down, he'd build a house out of not people clay, and he just waited out until he magically gets swapped back. Whereas Boo is entirely food motivated. And Rory and Logan and Lorelai are making a shitload of food. So they feed him lobster and mashed potatoes and all this good stuff. And Boo is happy and he's healthy. And then later Mitchum Huntsberger busts in and Boo turns him into candy and eats him. Problem solved.
Well, and the other thing is, the thing that really stands out with Boo, like he keeps asking people if they think he's handsome and he tries to make human life work. Nobody's treated him like a cute child except maybe Goku. Rory did babysitting at the inn all the time. We've seen her play with kids before, and it usually ends up working. Like, Boo kind of just needs a friend who doesn't know he's a giant murderer, and Rory Gilmore maybe could be that for about 5 minutes until Logan asks why they're spending time with this giant pink kid, and Boo gets angry because, you know, he wants to be handsome and then murders Logan Huntsberger.
So the rare get an innocent child to safety swap and Logan gets killed swap at the same time.
Two Huntsbergers for the price of one.
Efficiency. So that is Gilmore Ball Z for this week. Thank you all for listening so much. You know where to find us. Our Facebook is Gilmore Ball Z. Our Twitter is at Gilmore Ball Z. Our email is GilmoreBallZ@gmail.com. And our WordPress is GilmoreBallZ.wordpress.com. Go ahead and drop a comment, shoot us an email, whatever. We love hearing from you. Of course, also, if you have not already, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Facebook, wherever it is you get your podcasts. We really love it. It really helps us out. And if you're willing and able, check out the Gohan and Rory Fund. We are currently, at the time of this recording, out of bonus episodes. We'll see if that still is true by the time this drops. And so we only need a couple bucks before we do Jenny's wedding. And we have a Dragon Ball Z movie coming up, either Dead Zone or Tree of Might, depending on the poll. So if you go to the Gohan and Rory Fund, you can see the list of charities that it benefits. It's a matching program that we run where you donate to one of those charities on our WordPress site. And then take your donation confirmation, black out any personal details, and shoot it to us at our email, GilmoreBallZ@gmail.com. We will match your money, and the money that you spend will go towards bonus episodes and individual rewards for you, depending on how much you give. So, if you are in a place where you're able to, please consider donating. With that, thank you all so much, and we will see you next Saturday. So, how long will Logan keep up his denial about his trip to Asia? Will he actually let Rory buy the tickets, or is he gonna wise up at some point before then? Was that Bulma card thing an actual metaphor, or are we weebs with ice machines on this one? And will Martha's Vineyard pay us if we record an episode there? We'll promise to get the waves in the background. Call us. Find out next time on Gilmore Ball Z.